This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is part of our episode, Changing Landscapes. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Native American communities along the Gulf Coast of Louisiana are some of the first in North America to be hit by land loss and severe flooding caused in part by climate change. That has put a pinch on gardening, grazing, and trapping for the Poinochen tribe and others across the region. Their homes and traditional ways of eating are threatened.
Here there were cows, there were cattle. Now you go right there, there's hardly any more land. And now it's open water.
In a collaboration with the Food and Environment Reporting Network, Barry Yeoman has the story of tribes working to solve those problems.
This is my third trip down the bayou to visit Teresa Dardar, so I already knew to show up on an empty stomach. By the time I arrive in Poinochen, Teresa has pulled some trout from the freezer.
Donald went fishing, and he had a really good day.
As the trout sizzles in oil, another pan is filled with a dish called pot-fried shrimp. Pot-frying, Teresa explains, begins with cooking the shrimp in the liquid they naturally express when they get hot.
You just put them in the pot and the water comes out and you just let it boil out the water and then you just fry them.
Teresa is 63, with long dark hair and a face that conveys warmth and gravitas. This kitchen is inside the headquarters of the Poinochen Indian tribe. It's one of several French-speaking tribes that inhabit a zone south of New Orleans that's neither fully land nor fully water. These are flat delta lands laced with bayous, with pelicans flying overhead and shrimp boats tied to docks. Our lunch feels as fertile as the landscape, the shrimp briny and chewy, and tasting in a good way like the wetlands from which they were harvested. For generations, the Poinochen were pretty much self-sufficient. They hunted and trapped and foraged for medicinal herbs. They grew vegetables, and they pulled a bountiful harvest from the wetlands, shrimp, finfish, crab, oysters. Nowadays, every one of these traditions is under stress. We step onto the back deck and see why. Just a little ways out, there's a new levee under construction. From there, it's almost entirely open water. There used to be enough ground here for cattle to graze, but in coastal Louisiana, 16 square miles of land disappear every year. That includes the land around Poinochen. One geographer says that this area went from 10% water in 1916 to 90% water last year. From the deck, Teresa and I watch a truck driving back and forth, laying the base for the new levee, which is designed to protect Poinochen from hurricanes. Teresa wonders if its defenses are too modest and arriving too late.
Remember how high the waves was for Katrina? Well, this levee will not protect us. So, it's in God's hands, let's put it that way.
Teresa grew up in a small city about 15 miles to the northwest. As a girl, she and her mother would visit her grandfather here in Poinochen. Back then, there were a lot of trees, oak, hackberry, palmetto. Teresa's mother made boudin, a rice field sausage, with the pork her grandfather raised. But this land couldn't sustain pigs now.
It doesn't look like the same place at all. There's no more trees. I don't know if they would even want to still be there because the piece of land is so small now that I don't think anyone would be able to live there.
There are lots of reasons for land loss along the Louisiana coast. The levying of the Mississippi River starves the wetlands of the sediment they need to keep pace with a sinking delta. The dredging of man-made canals by the oil and gas industry sucks salt water inland. That, in turn, kills the vegetation that holds the land together. Plus, with climate change, sea levels are rising. The Poinochen has 680 members, and land loss has made it harder for the tribe to keep feeding itself. To that, throw in the impacts of the 2010 BP oil spill. Adding to the pressure is the global economy. Cheap imported shrimp have driven down dock prices here, making it harder for commercial shrimpers, like Teresa's husband Donald, to justify the cost of boat fuel. Fresh-caught seafood used to be a daily staple in Poinochen. Now Teresa has had to rely more on chicken, beef, and pork from the grocery store.
Before the spill, like Donald's brother next door, well, he used to do a crab ball at least 3-4 times a week on the side of the bayou. And even people, the community, they would pass by and they would stop and we'd visit, they'd eat. You know, it was a community thing. And then once the BP happened, you know, it all fell apart. And, you know, it wasn't, well, we don't see each other as much anymore.
Tribes throughout this coastal region are talking about how to stay fed as the landscape changes. The phrase they use is food sovereignty, producing healthy, environmentally sustainable, culturally appropriate food. And that leads us to the First Peoples Conservation Council. It's a group of 6 Louisiana tribes that meet regularly to brainstorm solutions. Representatives from nonprofits and the U.S. Department of Agriculture also attend. The meeting I went to was just before last Christmas. It felt like a homecoming with gifts and greetings. There were satsuma oranges, homemade cracklins.
Wow. Oh.
Even a miniature fishing net presented to Rosina Philippe, whose Grand Bayou village is surrounded by water.
It's a replica of a larger net, casting of shrimp, fish. Well, it's like, you have a loop and you put the loop on your wrist, whatever, and then you open it up, you catch it, and then you bring it out across the water, and you bring it onto the bank, and then you shake it out, and you have lunch.
That's it, hopefully.
That's right.
For the next few hours, they talk about creating a spreadsheet to record and share changes in the growing seasons. They discuss forming a co-op to market specialty foods like dried shrimp. They learn about loans that might become available to native food producers. They imagine gardens that could float like docks. Rosina's tribe is working on raised bed gardens that could be lifted mechanically during storms and exceptionally high tides to keep them dry.
We're going to put like a cement base with posts, you know, into the cement so it doesn't float away with the high tides. And like a pulley system where it's a wooden box, raised bed, where you can winch it up in case the tides get high, because it's a problem now putting things in boxes on the ground. So this is something that, you know, we're going to try.
As I travel along the bayous, tribal leaders show me how they're implementing ideas they brought home from the council meetings. Back in Pointe aux Chenes, I'm invited to a community potluck.
Let's slice you some ham. Is that enough?
Good.
I take my bowl of shrimp and corn soup, that's my third bowl for the record, and sit with another tribal leader.
My name is Christine Verdin. I am a member of the council here at Pointe aux Chenes.
She says the stack of lumber under the steps of the tribal building will be used to build a greenhouse. They plan to grow traditional medicinal plants and maybe vegetables.
What we'd like to do is, when we begin it, we'd like to get our kids involved, having kids from the community come and help water, weed it, and also teach them about the plants and what they could have been used for.
As elders die, that information is disappearing.
There's a young girl at Tulane who is working on a doctorate, and her doctorate is going to be on this sort of plants. But because we've lost some, she's researching places where they're still growing. There's another tribe that has these plants, and so she's hoping that they'll agree to possibly give us a few cuttings or whatever plants so that we can start.
It is a start, but it doesn't stem the land loss. Teresa Dardar knows the time may come when the entire tribe has to decide whether to leave Pointe aux Chenes.
And that's going to be a hard decision. And to take a bayou person out from their roots and bring them inland, I know it's going to be hard, because I grew up in the city and I know it's very different. But it'll probably happen here. You know, we just don't know when. But I know it will eventually happen.
Barry Yeoman reported this story.